Welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, April 6th, 2017. This is the Gozeman County Board of Commissioners convening for our administrative workshop. We've got some agendas up here. If anybody wants some, I'm happy to pass them out. You guys have one? You guys. Everybody, look at that. Good class this morning. First item on the agenda is department business. However, we don't see Sarah Ms. Wright in the audience. We'll go right to quarterly department updates. We have fairgrounds. Ms. Anderson here in her pretty fairgrounds shirt.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know where you want me to sit. It's all right.
Yeah,
so it's okay.
Right in the middle.
So we have a camera on? Is that what I'm seeing?
No. See. Those are external mics.
Okay.
Directional mics.
Directional. All righty.
Well, I have supposed to be. I think it records, but.
It looks like a taser, and it
kind of does.
Dual purpose. You step out of line, and that's...
Wow. I better be shaken.
Like the cattle prod you use out there at the arena.
That's right. In front of you, you have my regular notes, and I think I'll just leave that with what it is. I've got some other things to talk to you about that is not on that. We have some really good things going on. And the first thing that I want to talk about is the home show that we just got done with this weekend. As you know, about January 17th, we got the email that said from the home builders that they were no longer they weren't interested this year in putting on the home show. Well, we had three of our biggest buildings sitting empty if that was going to happen. And due to lack of staffing on our end, and I need to take the blame on that, we hadn't had a contract with them because they've been doing it for the last 30-some years. So we had no idea that this was coming at us. So we really, truly needed...
So you had a weekend reserved, but then there was... They just decided they're not going to...
Right, with no explanation.
Do they... And is the home builder still a association?
It is, but I'm understanding it's weakened in the membership. That it used to be like 80 plus, and now they're down to like 20-some.
Yeah, I think a couple of their meetings, the fields are really big supporters of the Home Builders Association, and they often host their meetings out of their park in Murphy, and their more recent meetings that I've attended are at a restaurant in that strip row thing on Redwood Avenue.
Okay,
down there.
Down
yeah.
By Papa's.
Past the RV place and stuff on the left-hand
right.
Side. And, you know, the place is pretty full on that one side when they've got, you know, the dinner event and stuff. But it's not what it used to be because we don't have as many home builders.
Well, I think that the downturn
business.
Just wiped out a lot of
people.
Yeah,
they're, yeah.
They're really out of the, from the home builders, the contractors, they're really goosey about putting that kind of investment out again because they really had a lot of money involved in buying property and speculation
right.
And so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And it shut like a valve. And it cost a lot of personal friends of mine. It cost them everything they have.
Well, when you talk to the realtors, they can't find anything, you know, for their clients.
No.
Well, it's because
I was one of them last year.
Yeah.
I mentioned that last night's meeting. I was at last night. I said, you know, we can't understand why the private sector isn't. Is it seeing the opportunity?
Yeah.
And I said, they're still trying to recover
and
get their, you know, pay their mortgage off from the one they lost. They lost everything along the line. You got to give them a little time to catch up, and it isn't there yet. So.
Well, and in that show, we were really lucky. We had 10 weeks to put it on, you know, from the very beginning when we got the notice to the very end. And we had, Mary was very instrumental in this. The board just said, let's just pull up our bootstraps. We've got these three buildings. I already turned away an event to Medford. And, I mean, you know, when you do big events and you use the big buildings, you do them months in advance. You don't just say, hey, next weekend I need your building. And so we knew that we had 10 weeks to do something. And we ended up well over 60 vendors. We used community service people. We used Liberty Watch was helping us with parking. Thank goodness they did. Our lots were full at 10:30 in the morning.
Wow.
On Saturday morning. I mean, when I'm saying it went off well, it went off really, really well. Is there things we can do better? Absolutely. But the big pieces were done, and they were orchestrated correctly. A lot of staffing hours went into this. When it was all said and done, it looks to me... you know, as far as the money side of it, it pays our expenses that we did. It offsets the staffing cost that was sitting in there. And so we probably will come out somewhere around $6,000 ahead. My buildings would have been empty anyway, so I didn't account that price into there. But we've already had probably half the vendors that were there already even indicated they want to come back.
They want to re-up, yeah.
Yeah, and they want their spot, or they've seen a different spot that they want. I mean, it was really exciting.
Sure.
And if you were there about 11 o'clock on Saturday morning, you wouldn't have found a place to park. And so we're really having to look at possibly next year. We'd love to see maybe the spring fling come into that with the plant side of it. We need a little bit more plant and garden stuff. We realized that. This weekend.
Right.
Well, we do need more parking, and that's kind of what happened. If you read the email that sent out about we've gone over to grade the parking lot in BMX, and when we found everything over there, and so yeah, we need the parking, and so it's just
well, there's just places taking to look at. I mean, I would figure if you had it adequately staffed, we should explore Public Works being available. And you know, they make an accommodation.
Oh.
All of their stuff is securely put away.
Yes, it is.
You know, for that weekend or something. Or, I don't know if the Three Rivers Bus Barn area and the 4-H parking lot was utilized.
No.
See, there's opportunities
right.
that we should anticipate for those kinds of events. What I like about this event happening this time of year is you're at the end of your fiscal year, and you're on fumes as far as revenues, and to have a nice event that
right.
can kind of infuse a little bit or cover some costs or fill a weekend, those are important things, I think,
they
for
are.
Your staggering out kinds of stuff throughout the year. Before you close your books in
mm-hmm.
June, you're not on this so much fumes, or you've got something that's going to be bringing
right, just left.
Real revenue, and maybe you know, 6,000, that's you broke even or made a little bit
right.
on your first attempt, having only 10 weeks to do it. Now you've got a whole year long time
right.
to lead into that, getting those things figured out, like Public Works parking for overflow or whatever else we need to do.
Well, and that's a really good idea, because the Public Works parking lot, I didn't even cross my mind in that 4-H area. I mean,
yeah,
that's a great
right
thing.
Right there.
Well, we have a debriefing today at 3 o'clock. So, with the group that was kind of instrumental in shoving everything, you know, to getting everything up and going.
Did you you filled the Y parking lot?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Did you have shuttles and everything like
We did not. We did not have shuttles. We just didn't have the money to do that. And it seemed to work. We had it was instrumental that we had somebody parking though at the gates
yes.
and things. And then the minute our lot looked like it was going to be full, we had a sign. I'd been proactive and had a sign out there that said parking with an arrow, so you could see that you were going to go the YMCA lot, you know, or the grandstand
YMCA
lot.
The YMCA lot filled up or no?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was
pretty full capacity, so it was great. I mean, it's a great problem to have, but you have to think outside the box as far as the next step.
Same time we have a year, you might think of maybe finding a sponsor
for a shuttle. Well, I already have one in mind, and I'd already talked to him, but he wasn't able to facilitate it. But I have one with Fort Knight Farms. And so that was a win. The other one that is...
Don't take public. This is a workshop just for the board today. But we can talk afterwards. You can send me an email.
And then the other one was the Vintage Car Club came to us, and they also are having the same growing pains. They don't have enough people to facilitate their swap meet in the fall. And so a couple of my board members are going to be instrumental, and we're going to take that as well.
Wow.
And run that, so we've got three solid events a year. So if we have the heat issue again, so you've got some backup if you have something that doesn't pan out.
That swap meet has always been
diversify your portfolio.
And,
right.
That swap meet's always been pretty popular, and
people love that stuff.
Oh, I know, I know.
And you've got a person in your ranks, Mary Groves, that's well aware of the cars and swap meets.
Absolutely.
Plus, she has.
Well, then we have other people that we know too.
Yeah, other folks. Yeah.
So that, you know, that is
a nice connection that you're a liaison now.
Right.
He's also the liaison to Public Works. And so he can facilitate.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's also a car guy.
I got that whole end of town.
You got the whole end of town. Okay.
He
was assigned at Fairgrounds 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think I've seen it. And then we got a nice $5,000 donation from a private person that came in on Monday.
Great.
So that was great on our end. You know, we'd send out those donation letters, and I think we ended up about 20,000 plus this year with private donations, because people really feel the value of the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
And they know that this is truly their event center.
Well, the thing that we've done is to make it a viable thing in our community. I think there's hope out there.
Oh, there's hope.
Yeah.
We're on a roll.
Yeah.
Our buildings are busy. I mean, if you want to rent anything in April or May, I can't even help you out, hardly. I mean, I'd really have to.
Yeah.
I'd try to talk you coming in the middle of the week
yeah.
at this point. So
well, the timing of the event center closing downtown, you know, with Cap Rocks Event Center no longer available,
right.
except to people that rent hotel rooms there. So I think, you know, we're when they're kicked out the door, we're standing on the porch saying, come on
in. Come on in. Well, and we've picked some up. The other thing is the Fair Board was very proactive when we had our workshop in November that we'd never had before. We'd had a workshop and we went through some strategic planning, and part of it was is that we truly are the event center in Grants Pass. And we, with your blessing, have changed our name to the Josephine County Fairgrounds and Event Center, and it says it on our big sign. It now is starting to say it on our letterhead. I mean, we're getting all that changed over. And that brings up one question that is TRT money. Because the transient room tax, from what we're understanding, and I think I briefly talked to you about that a little bit, is that it's for event-type centers and those type of things. And we're doing a little bit, I just want you to be aware, we're doing a little bit of research on that right now with Julie.
Sure.
Because the first question she asked me one day at one of the managers' meetings is, why are you not getting it? So that was an interesting conversation.
Why are you not applying that to the county?
Right.
There really aren't that many. She's going to say bed and breakfasts. I can't name one, and I've lived here my entire life. I know that there was the Ridgeview Bed and Breakfast out in Kirby, and then there's the tree houses. But a lot of those are kind of off the books. They're not your typical bed and breakfast. I know there are three
right.
hotels that I can think of. The Junction Inn, the Holiday Motel, and the VSUN.
Morrison's Lodge.
Morrison's Lodge.
Yeah, down at Belize.
And Belize Resort has cabins and rooms up above.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we stayed there.
Five. So it's going to be a lot, but something.
But we're also in the city, and we also pay TRT tax. So there's some different.
The county can't appreciate city-generated TRT money, can we?
I don't know that.
I don't think so.
Or
you can apply to them.
And see.
Make an application with the city.
I think it'd be worth a conversation.
If they could put us in their budget for X number of dollars a year.
Well, and
another thing is especially with the fairgrounds becoming an event center,
right?
We're filling motels.
Yes,
which
you know, when you have your shows and everything, they're the recipient
right.
of people filling their motels on
right.
those weekends. And I tried to get John Bowen, and maybe he's got something going. But I said I need to know the impact of Bowen and the impact of Back to the 50s. Why can't if we're tracking that? If he's got a mechanism to track that, why can't he track? Why can't he track Fair Week, and why
mm-hmm.
can't he track the Home Show Week or something
right.
of that sort to see if there is an impact from something we're doing at the county?
Well, you know there is with that many outside people that are coming
and
in.
I try to convince him, to convince staff over there that it should be at the point of sale when somebody comes in, and not it doesn't need to be you need to fill this out, a Dave Reeves type thing.
Right.
It's just a comment, you know, can I ask you why you're in Grants Pass? And you know, why did you pick Grant Pass? And find out why people are here. Why do they check into motels here? Oh, I'm tired, or you know, I heard you have a new In-N-Out Burger. But you know, and they did a little bit of that for a little while, and most of it was for family reunions, weddings. So
mm-hmm.
if it's weddings, why aren't we having a big wedding show or something of that sort?
Well, and we have weddings at the fairgrounds and receptions all the time.
Right.
When I was at the Oregon Fair Association meeting, I finally brought it up because it's been on the top of my mind. I have to find some sustainable money for the fairgrounds to be sure that we can offset with the buildings and the improvements on the buildings and do studies on the buildings like the indoor arena, for an example, just that type of a thing. And I went around the room and the fair managers get together, and in the room, Lincoln County gets 4% of the TRT money, and they're not in the city, which comes to about $50,000 a year. Washington County, $100,000. Prairie County is 2% for about $120,000. Klamath is 6% at $720,000 a year. And that's why they have a new arena.
Yeah.
So
I think it's something
we need to look at.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
When I went around the room, because I asked the question, you know, I'm not afraid to ask these questions. I need to know how we can facilitate Josephine County. How can we make this better? That's my job.
Well, another reason is they put us in there, you know, in urban area improvement.
Mm-hmm. Boundary.
Yeah, so we're in the. Well, it was specifically designated the fairgrounds. You know, like the Dimmitt campus was not. Seemed crazy to me that they wouldn't include that area relative to downtown for their urban renewal district. That's what it's called. But, you know, the fairgrounds is. So
well, this year's urban, or this time's urban renewal district came from down along I-5.
They can design it anywhere.
Down through town.
Yeah, it could have been.
But it goes out the fairgrounds.
17.85% of your total.
25%. They're at 18. They're at 18 right now. There's 7% left. They still have capacity within their urban renewal area. You can't allocate any more than 25% of your area to this concept. They only their proposal was 18, which makes sense. You don't want to allocate everything. You know, let
right.
future councils, if they see, oh, you know, we've got a spot out there. Let's grab that one. And so they theoretically could grab the Dimmitt campus still, but they didn't choose to do it in their initial thing. And it's really important. It's a multi-year approach. You know, to get that $105 million bond that they're looking for, they got to show some increased revenues. And they're going to get those Brett Robbins and the Hampton Inn and all that stuff
mm-hmm.
coming online. Their revenues are going to start to be generated, and that bond will sell. But we should have had some sort of conversation about how do they dovetail in with this fair and make it what it should be.
Well,
they've got $18 million started for
that's what I understand.
Conventions.
That's what I understand.
So.
And what a great dovetail just in with the fairgrounds. I mean, we would be the premier piece going right into there.
Yeah.
But it's also our responsibility as the county to be sure that our buildings look good and they're up to date and they're safe.
You can actually justify investing in infrastructure at the fair that's going to last. If it was just a fair and it didn't have a convention
right.
element to it,
right.
it actually, there's nothing, you know, it might be a dirty word out there. People may not like to hear it. I don't guarantee you it will not be there. In my lifetime, the fairgrounds won't be there. As much as everybody will try and whatever, it's got to be tied to something.
Oh, it absolutely has to.
Brings it into the next century. Well, there will be a better and higher use for it.
Well, we have to look out.
The old fair, county fair thing with agriculture, livestock, and things of that sort. And that is dwindling, so now we have to use it in multi-use. And, you know, that didn't pay the freight, so now we've got to figure get creative is how to pay the freight.
Exactly.
And
well, we're doing it.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
I think we're on.
We're doing it.
And it may work and it may not.
I think it's going to work.
I think
tying it into like a convention center style stuff, that's the way it.
It's just a natural fit.
It really is. And then you can justify, you know, spending $5 million on an arena.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just an indoor horse riding
right.
arena or stalls during horse racing.
Facility.
It's a million different things, you know.
I was going to try to get over to the Klamath deal because Larry Ford was telling me about it. They have a fantastic arena over there.
But there's a reason.
They
get money.
Huh?
They get money.
Yeah.
So,
well,
anyway.
I don't want it to subsidize. I want it to actually generate its own.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if we were just
build it
subsidizing it to do what it's doing, fulfilling the need now, that's
right.
That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That's not the best thing I see.
So maybe you can answer this or somebody in the room can answer it. What's our next step with applying for TRT funds?
I don't think we have to wait at all for.
Which entity do we go to? The
Julie
city,
knows a lot about it.
City finance.
I think
director?
Julie would be a really good.
Yeah, of existing TRT generated resources. But what Julie's proposing as well, I think Peggy's saying, is that we're going to apply. We have the authority right now to institute a TRT tax outside the city limits on existing county facilities
right.
that provide that.
Right.
And so I don't even know if that has to go to the voters. I think the county has the authority to impose that. It's one of those only things we can do. And so we just never have because there haven't been, who's going to do that? How much is it actually going to generate?
Right.
But we could.
But is it because there's only five or six of them that we can name on one or two hands, would it be smart to put them in a room and just say, you know, we're looking at doing this and see how that affects them, and if they say, you know what, yeah, we'd be glad to get on board. And then if it does,
I think Julie also had a little scope of that visiting with the city. She wants to visit with the city about it.
Well, I think if you could,
because we are in the city.
What the city can contribute, then you know what rate you would like to set. But there's parameters. I think it's like no more than 2% or something like that, which you can put on the TRT from accounting. And maybe we figure out what, try that for a little while. Try it 1%. Try it 2%. Start with that.
Let's see what it generates.
Okay. I'll be back with you on that.
You want to put together an estimate about what it generates and then how that's going to benefit Morrison's Lodge by saying, we're going to only be advertising to help you fill more rooms. It's not all about just doing this. It's
right.
About improving your
clients. Your
the whole point. Transient room tax it's like a revolving kind of a situation. And advertising for that issue to bring people into the WESD and to go on the road to visit the parks. Parks is the other one that you probably want to be involved
in. My daughter's in-laws down at their Elevate Technologies downtown, and when they have their think tanks and stuff, they rent the WESD in.
Yeah.
I mean, out from all the way down in LA.
They like it. They really love it.
Absolutely love it.
And I want to dovetail with parks anyway for other reasons like some of the foreclosure money and things like that out there. I think that there could be a way to really blend all this together.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in this as a partnership.
And all that shit.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, unless you have any more questions of me, you've got some things in front of you.
So how's the electronic message center thing going?
Very good. We have generated through the end of February about $7,600 this year.
So you're making payments on that, right?
Yes, I am. $500 and some a month. Plus,
There's nothing saying you can't pay it off sooner.
Oh, no. I've already given them $10,000.
Okay.
When I received the sponsorship money. And then if you notice, I'm in the black right now.
Yep.
And so that's a beautiful thing.
It is.
And we're in the last thing that I just wanted to say is we're in the talking to horse racing. I know that they have said that they had a good year last year, and they would like to give us $1,000 when I brought up the rent for the grounds, because nothing's been changed since 2012, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's time that we look at this at a little bit broader scale. And when I was talking to Commissioner DeYoung yesterday, we talked about possibly putting in there that maybe it's like 1% of their gross or something.
Percentage of the net. They said, we'll give you a percentage of
the net.
And I said, why don't you go for the 10% of the net, and it was going to be $1,000. I said, why don't you go for 1 or 2% of the gross and see how that pencils out? Because net is the end of the day after you've run
out. Have a better liaison for this situation.
So I suggest you know.
He's going to probably need to go with my next meeting.
Because they would, I don't know if you'd be able to take in their parimutuel side of it. All the betting that they bring in as part of their growth.
We don't take in the percentage. We take in percentage on every beer and
the
food on the grounds, and I don't get that for horse racing. I don't get any of that.
Yeah.
So it's really time that we look a little broader term on that, because my costs have increased significantly. When I was here before, we talked a little bit about, because every time they need us to do something, I have to have a cost factor against it. And I believe last, when we had talked about that, we had costed it out about $35 an hour. We're really, truly, if you're using my equipment, my diesel and my machine, we probably need to be looking in the $50 an hour range.
Yeah, we looked at
that. At least. For me to take a tractor to public works, it's $65 an hour. For them just to look at it.
And when they say, well, you can't justify it. You see, I went down to I wanted to rent a tractor, and it was a buck and a quarter a day, but it worked, with a 3-hour minimum, so there's,
So it's really important. Your justification for that is we can't undermine the private sector.
No.
Anything we do has to be a competitive wage. When we put out that we do, what is that thing you do, Terry? We sign and stamp something. Notary service. People don't understand that we can't charge If the best competitive rate out there is $10 for a notary, we can't charge $750.
No.
Because we paid for her certification because she's on the clock and the taxpayers are paying for it.
That's
we have to charge
$10.
We have to charge the competitive
rate. At least. Yeah.
Because otherwise you're undermining the private sector's ability to compete. And it's not
you
fair that they're being subsidized by the public dollars.
You're like $38 an hour. We'll come out and dig this ditch.
That's how the rate should be set, is what is the market competitive rate for that service.
And then we have to stay with that.
You have to stay with
and
that.
And defend it.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, wow, gee, how, what are you doing?
It's a
that
county
policy?
Board policy yeah. on everything we do.
Good idea.
So I wanted to talk about the barns, the 4-H barns. There's a young lady that I grew up with. I know
yes.
her quite well.
She's
very interested in doing some things out there. And I'm actually going to be, we're the board of the 4-H Extension, and they are 4-H barns
right.
for 4-H purposes.
Correct.
I'm applying the same principle back to the horse racing. What they need to understand is their track is not used for dog racing. It isn't used for this. It isn't used for that. Their benefit to the fair needs to be proportional to their impeding other types. That it's not like that parking lot that you can use for every single event. Everybody uses it. It's not like the commercial building that you can use for 100 different things. It's a horse track, and it's horse stalls. It's all these things that are just for this event.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they're not even keeping up with the rate that you would charge for any other kind of event, their rate needs to be in excess because their facility is so specialized, it's impeding, you know, it's not a multi-use type of infrastructure. When they're paying less than what a typical space would be, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's the opportunity cost is what I go back to, and they need to be covering in excess that space that they're utilizing because it isn't a multifunctional facility.
Does the fair, when they have the truck pulls and stuff during the fair, do they do it on the track?
They do it right in front of the grandstands. They
yeah.
do not. They do it on the infield. Whereas that
on the infield, it's not on the track
right.
itself. The
right.
track is the buffer.
Well, I am using the track this year, and I will be using it for WGS when they do the metal militia and the motorcycles right in front of the grandstands. But the track is very rarely used, and I deliberately don't use that.
They don't use it because they don't like it to be used because it can't have
right.
a piece of metal that drops
nope.
off.
Can't dig down in it.
Down into
yeah.
it. They can use it for a rodeo. They can't use it for the mud deal that you do.
Yeah.
Because it's you know they spend
a lot of money. Yeah, they did.
A few years before I took office, they spent $150,000 to $200,000 on the soil.
The right dirt in.
The right kind of soil and stuff, and so it's far too expensive to repair a track if they needed to, and if something happened to a horse because they kicked up a rock, you know, they need to rock pick it more. I run that
mm-hmm.
sometimes, and I see rocks that shouldn't be there. Rock pickers are not expensive. I would almost insist that every time, before every race season, they rock pick it. Because if you don't have an experienced person, and the horse racing people are adamant about this, who drags the track, they inevitably drag too deep, and they bring up rocks that shouldn't be there. And that's the problem. And then a horse is running at 30 miles an hour, hits a rock, breaks its leg, that's it, they're out. And it's not worth it. You know, there's a $10,000, $20,000 horse, and you could have spent $500 to rock pick that and alleviate
right.
that problem.
Right.
Come on, people.
No, that's really good because we're right in the
analysis.
We're right in the contract right now.
Good.
So it's perfect timing.
I know that historically our average horse per race, there's a stat out there, and we weren't exactly stellar in that. Is that, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Average horse loss per race. There's a statistic, a national average, and I saw how we rated a couple
of
years
ago. Yeah, and I don't know how.
We can do better.
I know that they are also going to be streaming it live, is what I'm understanding. So I think there's some benefit, and they don't have to pay for the jockey insurance any longer. They get it reimbursed through the Horsemen's Association out of Portland, so racing the commission.
Back to the barns. I want to work with her on that. And as the 4-H Extension Board, they've got a reserve. They've got revenues there. And I'm not so sure that they couldn't be, that some of those couldn't be applied to improving the facilities there. There's a facilities reserve that's approaching $300,000. That's
what I understand.
We're going to be working on a long-term plan and a strategy for where they're going to go. And I've talked to John Punches about this already. And I've been a big proponent of increasing that reserve. His goal, my goal, is $500,000 because I think he's going to need about $1 million. But he's going to be able to get grant funding to build that new facility for the 4-H extension or add on to their existing. And now that Food and Friends is out, I'm leaning more and more towards that's not a bad location. They might just need to expand. And that's a lot less expensive than building a brand new building that may cost $1 million or $3 million.
And you're talking about for extension.
Yeah. And they can bond that. All that to be said, I think that there's resources there in the $10,000-$20,000 range to be contributed to a re-roofing of the barn.
She indicated that she wanted
to do the one down on the right hand side.
Yes,
with the
one you saw that, yeah. Yeah, they
that
came
needs
in
to be taken care of. We're going to ruin the boards that are underneath the roofing if we don't get on something.
Yeah.
Did you ever get an estimate on what it is to fix that?
Well, we've been told through building and maintenance it was going to be over $100,000, and Jen really believes that she can probably get it done through a private contractor for well under that. Because there's two or three barns there. They're kind of layered up. It isn't just one barn.
And they're not all the same style. Really.
And they're not all the same style.
And they were, you know, because the one I looked at was flat, and then it went on a crown roof, I think, or
it's pitched an A-frame with a ventilation.
Probably with a vent on both ends.
Yeah. She's tenacious.
So that is her next goal.
Not a lot of hips and valleys in there, so it should be relatively easy to do.
Really easy. Rolled roofing. I don't know. You and I could probably do it in a weekend. I mean, anyway, so I'm thinking of figuring that out, but I don't know what the 4-H, what the fair can do to try to, if there's a couple different funding streams, I think we can get it done.
We need to look.
Because that's all used for 4-H, it's dedicated to the 4-H barns and so on and so forth. Does OSU Extension have a special fund? I know that we had a talk, you know, one of the presenters at County College, he had $12.4 million, he was the provost at OSU, and he said, I've got $12.4 million and he had, this is where he said, I've got the coastal people, Coastal Caucus, I've got the Willamette Valley, and I've got Eastern Oregon, but I got $12.4 million in addition, I'm going to serve between those. And I raised my hand, what about Southern Oregon?
Is that Bruce Sorty?
I don't know who it is. Yeah, it is Bruce. And I says, hey, what about Southern Oregon? You're not even on the map. He goes, well, I was going to get to that. No, you weren't. If you were going to get to it, you'd have been.
Yeah. I went through a study in Umatilla County. I was part of a study in Umatilla County.
Okay, good. Then you've got a personal relationship. You can talk to the guy?
I got
to
go.
No, we need a roof on our 4-H bar.
Yeah.
For Pete's sake. And we'll get competitive bids for him, and then he just pays the bill. Make nice with Southern Oregon for a change instead of just ignoring us every time.
Well, I think it's going to take a number of different funding streams. And I just go back to the fact that the Catholic Church raised $3.5 million in 9 weeks or whatever it took.
Yeah.
There's resources out there in the community, and people support 4-H.
They support the fairgrounds as a whole as well.
They really do. So I like that there's a priority of the fair. The fair is really what your ORS is really dictated to.
Correct.
And it needs to be it's like the platform, it's the foundation. And we need to put some emphasis on that. 4-H is going to do that this next year. So I haven't told John yet, but that's what's coming. And I think the board will support that. So anyway, that'll be the ongoing project for the next year.
Well, I'd love to see, since they do get different kinds of funding through there, that would just be the perfect
sounds like a reasonable contribution.
It does. And Sue Hunt's kind of aware of that as well.
We also kicked around on I had a tour out there a couple weeks ago. Having some engineering outfit look at that at the arena and just see how far gone it is or if it's too far gone or whatever, that may be the turning point for the arena, whether you fix it or replace it. But I think we're going to need some kind of professional you know, we can go in there and look at it, step on the creaky boards and watch out for that one and this, that, and the other. But when you get an engineer in there, you're going to say, you know, the place has got good bones.
We've had that done.
Have you had it done?
That was done a few years ago. Ryan went out there with an engineer, and there's pillar problems, there's foundational problems under a few, but most of it is structurally sound. I question that from a standpoint of the trusses having pigeon defecation on them for decades. Mm-hmm. There's no way that those trusses are structurally sound. So my just general knowledge of how it should be put together, I can't see investing just an envelope, the new $250,000 envelope, on trusses that they're not going to last. If you've got a 30, 40-year roof, those trusses are not going to last 30 or 40 years.
Well, and talking with Forge yesterday, we talked about, you know, different styles of arenas, and I think you mentioned one over in Klamath Falls. It was primarily, it was designed by the barrel racers for the barrel racing sport, but yet it didn't lend itself for the larger arena for something else or rodeos or whatever. So I think, you know, I think we need to call in an expert or call out to other counties and find out how and what kind of design they're doing and what they're for.
So
we can include as many things as possible.
This kind of dovetails in with a conversation I had with Aaron about the Urban Renewal District, and starting a joint city-county project on that 4-H. The preliminary discussions about what does it look like to put a convention center where the public works facility is. All of those facilities are fully depreciated. There's nothing that's been new there in decades.
Right.
And it's not designed well, Rob would say. So there's nothing, no value there. We can start from scratch someplace else. And what would it look like? And so there's two things. Design what you want, and then how do we make what the arena needs to be. Maybe it's a 5-year bridge or whatever to get there. What do we keep doing to the arena to keep it to be in the situation it is? But it's fully depreciated too. When you tear it down tomorrow, and you really wouldn't be out much, but you got to have an alternative. You got to have another facility you're going to. And so that's what I'd like to see. If he's interested in putting some resources into that, I think we could do that. And
you could. And here's how you get to Mr. Cubic, indoor soccer.
There's no reason why. I mean, I wouldn't want to build a facility that couldn't accommodate indoor soccer.
Indoor soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Roll out the turf, roll it back up, and build on big rollers at both ends and both sides.
Yep. Well, the bleachers go underneath, and they just pull back, and you can change your floor.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
I think you're right.
Basketball, ice skating. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff we're not doing here. And we're a big city. I mean, we're getting
the World Wrestling Federation.
That's actually what the
don't laugh at that.
I'm not.
The commercial building was designed for boxing. That's the whole four-score corner with the and we've had wrestling in the what's the other building called?
The pavilion.
The Pepsi Pavilion.
Yeah.
The Coke Pavilion. How's that going? Do we have a contract with Coke yet?
Mm-mm.
Why not?
Not either one.
I like Coke.
Actually, I've talked to Coke and Pepsi both. I'm understanding that Coca-Cola is in the process of being sold to possibly Douglas County Coke.
Oh,
it's going from a
distribution.
Yes. And that's in the process in Douglas County.
Yeah. They're good friends with John Rasher. And Tim Freeman.
Well, I'm understanding that that's in the process if it hasn't gotten done yet.
Okay.
And so they've held up because it's been corporate, and they've had their hands tied here. And then I've talked to Ken from Pepsi probably 14 times since I've been here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorry to take all your time.
Not at all. You were just killing time.
Great story.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy.
Mm-hmm. You read this right? I didn't get a chance to review Peggy's budget, but I do have to say that Sarah's budget is probably one of the most comprehensive, easily understood budget side of the scene since I've been here. So just take an opportunity to say that while she's sitting here.
Well, I'll say Peggy delivered hers the other day, and hers is already spot
on too.
There's allowed to be multiple good budgets. There is.
Just letting you know, you're not the only one that has a really good budget.
Good.
First county he's ever read. I'm
I apologize about not being here first thing. Good morning.
No, this is a workshop. Stuff happens. No worries. So you've got an agenda item of.
Yes.
Item number 1A, is contract between Josephine County and Robco Incorporated for Shorter Sewer Project. And this is predominantly funded through the Solid Waste Agency, a grant from them.
Solid Waste Agency has covered the $32,000 in SDC funds specifically.
Oh, good.
So,
still got construction.
Yeah, Parks, I believe, has spent about $4,500 for the engineering. So far, in the engineer's complete, should I say. We went to bid, and Robco won that bid with the low of $72,000, which was extremely high compared to what we thought it would be in order to fix the sewer line. But because of all the old tree roots and the infrastructure and them having to break up ground and put in all of the new lines and essentially do new sewer lines going out to the street instead of to the old leach field, it's an entirely new project, you can say. So we discussed with them ways to
reduce
the cost drastically. It wasn't as much as we were hoping for, but essentially instead of taking it along the back side of the RV sites and having to remove tons of bushes and cut through a lot of tree roots, we're relocating it out on the side of the road as you drive into the park itself. And so it's going to be a lot less removal, a lot less tree roots, a lot better for the park. So with rerouting it, the contract is still at $66,000.
Is there asphalt stuff that has to be cut through?
There is some asphalt that will have to be
probably
cut.
Probably
yes.
Approaches to the individual, probably not the roadbed itself, but they're probably going to cut the, as you turn into an RV space, maybe?
Yeah, we're planning to go alongside of the road, and so you'll have to cut apart each of the entries to the RVs, absolutely,
right.
And then you have to also bring the laterals back from the road to the spot where they're going to be hooking into. So
how does that, I don't want to be a penny wise and a pound foolish.
Yes.
It's like, I guess roots are roots and they're going all over the place, but access to those. So I'm looking at the Illinois Valley Library sewer line is seemingly constantly being infused with roots, and we've decided we're just replacing that whole line from the building to the street because it's just been an issue since I've been here.
Yes.
Ryan's tired of dealing with it, so we'll just get it done right. Is it going to be hard to access or maintain or replace if it's going underneath all of those? If we're digging it up now to put it in, we're going to be digging it up in 10, 15 years because we've got to get access. Where if we would have just done it out past the bushes and the trees and stuff, that would be cheaper the next time if we have to access it. I don't know. Just trying to think.
Yeah.
20 years down the road, 10 years down the road.
The materials they're using for sewer lines right now is basically you don't need to go look at it in 10 to 15 years. As long as you have your clean out and whatnot, you're golden.
The old steel and it's soldered, the fittings are.
I have no clue what they use.
That's how they use
it. A lot of them are using the plastic stuff. And it's
the way they used to do it. That solder and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and that breaks down over time and roots can get into it. But now it's all plastic and it's glued and sticking. There shouldn't be any way to get in.
Yeah, for us, looking at where we're placing it, we don't think that the future maintenance of it is going to create an issue in either location.
Okay.
More taking it along the back route, you have a lot more untouched ground, and so you're dealing with a lot more rock and a lot more unknowns back there than just taking it out to the road.
Well,
and it's not.
If you're going to get a tree root in it, it'll be back at the back of the property, not the front.
There's a lot less trees up front where we are laying the line now, so we think that it will be a better location overall.
Is it?
Yes.
It's not for the whole park, it's just the part of it?
Yes. Yeah, when you drive into the park, all of your RV sites on your right-hand side, including the host site, is what had failed.
Okay.
The rest of the park is already on city sewer. So this is the very last section that was connected to a leach field.
And that's the most it seems like the most populated section.
I think you brought it to us before, but how many spaces are we talking about? Didn't mean to interrupt.
Not at all.
I was thinking out loud.
I believe that it is 11 RV sites plus the host site, so a total of 12 hook-ins that we need to do.
Yeah. This was the section that in past years, it was the only section in Schroeder that was open all winter long. This winter, along with many of my locations, I looked at keeping more of our sites open to increase revenue, have more spaces available. So this year, actually, that was the only one not available for full hookup sewer, and the rest of the RV site got open, and our numbers are up from Schroeder over the winter.
Now, I have a question. Have you done any, I know you couldn't charge full hookups fees on that all along because you couldn't do that.
Yes.
Have you run any kind of numbers on your return on investment at $66,000?
I have not sat down and done that specifically. However, we have considered as a whole that the full hookup sites are really are what are desired, and as our system as a whole, they're the first ones reserved throughout the entire system. They're the ones that are desired. We no longer have dump stations available to the public. All of them are shut down in every park that we own, and we don't have visions of reopening them.
So we have to go that way anyway.
Yes, essentially.
So what is a full hookup price per day versus the one where you couldn't charge the full hookup?
Currently, we're at 30 for the full hookup, 25 for partial hookups, which is what is being charged right now on those sites.
So it's only $5 a day.
Yeah, and then you have tent sites that are a 20. Yes, and Schroeder is our ranked number third as far as camping nights go. So, and it's neck and neck with Lake Selmac with drastically reduced number of sites. So it is a very popular park for us.
It's the closest one to the city.
Absolutely.
This is it's a good question, but
yeah.
It's almost silly to ask it at this point. I know you didn't want to put in a dump site. Can you hook a dump site up to the city sewer system?
I think that's a whole other conversation and monthly fees that would have to
You're going to incur sewer fees anyway,
yes.
Getting hooked up to the city sewer. But my question is that you're investing all of this infrastructure to facilitate a mobile RV unit who could, at the end of their stay, pay for a dump in a centralized location for $20,000 or putting something in like that at a dump station. Has that been evaluated as far as cost-benefit analysis and saying, we could just leave these not full hookup, but understanding that if you pay full hookup, you get to dump at the end of your stay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Something like that. And that infrastructure being, you know, one centralized location that you could theoretically use for probably everybody, but specifically those 11 camp spots, that only costs $20,000 to put in. We still have that monthly sewer fee and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to put in the infrastructure to all of those. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If I was a private sector, that's what I would do. I just say, we provide full hookups to there. You're going to have to utilize your own facility, but you get to dump for free. You get water and you get electricity hookup,
mm-hmm.
just like you normally would, but you have to retain your own waste in your facility, and then when you get done, you just dump
it. It is well worth $5 not to have to go
in the RV
dump at the end of a stay.
Oh, are you kidding? Yeah.
That is a messy, messy project. I don't care how you... Anyway, about the time you think everything's going right, you're up to it in your academia. But I think, you know, by going to what you said, could we add a dump site at the end of this thing? I don't know whether it would be any more money on your sewer bill. Do they charge you per hookup when you're going to the city, or is it just one flat deal?
Yes, the SC... SDC are the initials I'm looking for. So that is paid per site based on the volume that they believe is going to be used by each of those. And so if we were to add another dump station, then we'd be looking at SDCs for those, and they'd have to calculate what it is that they're going to be charging us. And yes, it's a monthly fee regardless of how much we use it.
That's separate from the monthly sewer fee.
Yes, completely separate. Yeah, two different pots that you have to talk about. My concerns with the dump stations right now is with the staff that we have, with the volunteers that we have, when dump stations are left open, for instance, Indian Mary's was still operable when I got here. It is amazing how many people, especially in the winter, will pull up to that, will use it, and then take off with never paying. And the hosts are chasing their tails with trying to manage that. Especially with Schroeder being so close to town, I would be concerned about that. Then you have the aspect of some people aren't clean when they go to dump their sewer, and there's issues, and so then you're probably going to have more of an unsanitary location that needs more attention, and then the smell that comes with it versus an RV hookup, it's just kind of clean, it's done properly, and it's usually before your tanks are full. I think it's just the desired route to go with. And I'm with you. Could we make the option to keep these partial hookups? We can absolutely make that decision.
It's just a lot of money, and I can do the mental math. You don't pay this off in 20 years. You don't.
No,
11 hookups.
Return on investment is not there.
It's not there. It's a convenience element. You're getting $5 more than you are getting at $25.
And there's 11 sites, there's $55.
$66,000 for $5 a hookup. It takes forever to get there. And what we're doing is we're providing for convenience. It's not the $30 a day. That's not your payoff. It's the difference. It's the delta between 25 and 30. Right. So it's $5.
If you went to full hookups at 35, are you pricing yourself out of the market?
Well, here's where we're at. Indy and Mary went seasonally up to $35, and we are going to have to look at numbers over the next 5 years. We have a $5 minimum wage increase over, you know, the next period of time. Well, I guess around here it's like $350 because we've got to get up to $1,350. It's already affecting our budget. That is a huge cost to be able to employ people, and I don't want to raise day use fees. I really don't want to increase camping, but we're going to have to first get rid of all of our discounts with the annual pass. We're going to have to go in that direction. Then we're going to have to look at overnight camping being increased. It's not a question of it will be a question of when.
The alternative motel, look at Knott's Landing the Moon Half Moon Bay or whatever it is, Moon Mountain out there. Those are overnights. They have some overnighter stuff in there. What is their day use fee? And go from there.
Right now we're
gotta go up. And motels haven't been shy about going from $89 a night to $119 to $129 a night.
Yes.
And they're not shy. How about it? But anyway, how long have we been at $30 on a full hookup?
I'd have to go back and look at the history. But I believe that we did fee increases 3 or 4 years ago for the full hookup sites. We kind of had a series of a few years. 5 years ago. Thank you so much.
I don't think it was that long.
I thought it was 5. It might be 4.
It's been a while. Let's just say it's been a while.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't feel like it was that long.
You know, another thing to consider about the $66,000, I mean, sure, if we divide that by the $5 and then divide it by the 12 available sites, yes, we need 1,100 camping nights to break even.
You're only charging for 11.
The
host doesn't pay.
I think the host is the 13th.
Oh, you said
11. Oh, so then it might be 12. So okay, perfect. So then roughly 1,200 camping nights or so is how much we need to break even. So
it takes 3 years.
Really, it's not that much. And then another thing to consider is the only money that
will at 100% capacity.
And you're not going to get 100%.
360 days.
If you went to 30, you'd cut that in half.
Yeah, but I think feasibly within 10 years, this project would be a break even. So I don't think that it's like this unattainable investment. I hate to start chopping things in our parks and decreasing services when our budget's doing good, and we need to continue to provide great services and great sites for the public. And if we start reducing full hookup sites to partial, it's just going to start chopping at the system. So I would rather do this now and know that these sites are safe for the next 30 to 40 years.
The park is the same system.
Absolutely. Another thing is, although we are a self-funded department, we have two pots of money that come in that are not self-funded by our own revenues. One is MAP money for maintaining boat ramps. That's a very, very small portion. The large chunk of money is near $330,000 for RV registration fees. If you own an RV, you pay your RV registration fee. That goes up to the state. It gets divided by counties based on number of sites available. We are being paid to maintain these sites so that RVs can continue to come into our park and use them. So I think that it's a service.
Are we paid different based on full hookups or partial hookups?
We are not. We even get paid for tent sites. And so, good point. But I just would
still
hate to start limiting the full hookup sites. There are some people that will only stay with full hookup sites.
No, I would imagine. I mean, my mom and dad are not interested in dumping at the end of their stays. They like that, but there are camp spots available for that. The other question that I have, okay, so we move forward with this. How do we depreciate this infrastructure over maybe more sites in the future? If you were to expand Schroeder Park 10 years down the road, you're going to do it at the backside of these 11, I think. If I'm looking at the map, you've got all of this space out there that's just a grassy field. Right?
Next
to the 11?
We go from the 11 going down to all of the other RV full hookups, and as you keep going, you're into a tent loop.
Right.
So that entire thing is tent loop. I would not then want to put more RVs on the other side of the tent loop, but there would be the possibility of then those tent sites going into RVs. or we continue to push out.
Because those are actually getting down into maybe potentially a riparian area and all of that.
Yeah.
But look at the 11 spots that you first drive into.
Mm-hmm.
And the back side of those being that grassy field area, am I right?
I see. So you're looking at the upper day use field that we have now. Yes. So
you could put in, yeah, you could put in 10, 15 RV spots up there, and really not impact your day use field.
It's uphill.
It is, and it really isn't used that much. Every time I go down there, there's like maybe softball, or there's the dog park area. There's the playground thing that they just put in a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That's where we're going to expand Schroeder Park, in my mind, just back of the envelope. I always want to be looking at putting in infrastructure that facilitates a vision, not
mm-hmm.
just what we're trying to accomplish, the situation of the day. It's short-sighted to potentially, we could put in, this is where I'm coming back,
mm-hmm.
if your difference between 77,000 and 66, if you put in with a vision of, we're going to put in 15, 20 more RV spots on the upper side, put in your infrastructure that you can tie into eventually.
And we are. We have a 6-inch main line tying into the 8-inch city sewer line. And so the end of that could certainly then 90 up, well, a soft 90 up to the upper field. And then
okay.
you can continue to add to it.
Okay.
We originally, they engineered with a 4-inch pipe, and the city said, absolutely not, you're going to a 6-inch, and I agree with that decision because, yeah, we can continue to just expand off that one 6-inch
okay.
main, so that is a possible expansion. Yeah, and as a whole, we as the parks over the next 5 years need to be looking at each site, creating a vision for a master plan for each,
mm-hmm.
and deciding if we want to go in the direction of hosting more weddings, expanding dog parks, you know, going into more RV sites.
Really,
so
it generates revenue.
And so can weddings. Yeah. So
yeah.
I think each site will certainly be looking at how we do it. And, you know, part of that is looking at each park, how many RV sites are available, what's their capacity per
mm-hmm.
year, you know, and deciding
yeah,
when and if
we
need to.
You wouldn't want to add, if you're never at capacity in Schroeder,
exactly.
Then you really wouldn't be justified in adding 15, 20 spots. But also, in your budget, the advertising element is a little, it's maintained. And I'm in favor of you doubling that effort and really taking it on aggressively. That was my main charge, I think, was getting your facilities, understanding your budgets, getting
mm-hmm.
your staffing right. The next thing is advertising your facilities,
yes.
Selmac and Schroeder's, so that you're achieving more of a 100%, getting closer to that, like you are at Indian Mary and some others. So you're already providing infrastructure and maintenance and campos.
Yeah.
Now you need to, and I know you have that vision.
Yeah, I do, and I actually had a sit down with Travel Grants Pass about the possibilities of, because his focus is Grants Pass, but he realizes that Josephine County as a whole
right.
is their intention, and so I've talked about what would be, you know, some kind of nominal fee to help in exchange with advertising
mm-hmm.
or kind of tourism industry
yeah.
for our camping. So we are moving in the direction of sending them information to get a county logo for parks,
yep.
to get brochures for each individual park, and to start that ball rolling. So I am moving forward with marketing.
Dovetailing with our last presentation about fairgrounds, too.
Yeah.
You're, what, 1.5-2 miles from the fairgrounds?
For Schroeder?
And,
yeah,
you know, when we're talking horse racing and big events there, and you have space available,
yeah.
you could be part of that deal. So you need a motor home hookup. Guess what? We're just down the road. We have a county park that can, and it's right on the river, and you're going to love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there has to be a symbiotic relationship. When she is alluding to the parks reserve or the property stuff, that is statutorily, and we're working on some stuff with that. It's got to be symbiotic. So, you know, Schroeder needs to be on the reader board as RV space. Why isn't it? Should be.
Yeah, except, you know, Jackson County just spent a tremendous amount of money on that RV park. And it's strictly for their concert event they've got coming up.
Well, Central Point got the contract for that.
I call that Medford.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, anything on the other side of Blackwell Hill, Medford.
Right.
Man. So, but yeah, they spent a tremendous amount of money.
Oh, yeah.
On.
They're never going to repay that. It was crazy. They
never.
Probably never.
But one of the things they've done, you know, when they have the Rod and Custom Show, there's
yeah.
a tremendous amount of people that bring their
yeah.
hot rods up, and they were always on that place on that that concrete slab out there. They're going to move them over there, and that's all going to be cars now. They're doing a bunch of change on Rick Wilson over there. Rich Wilson, excuse me. I met with him a couple of times. He's got a really big idea about that, and I think eventually Grant's task will be in Josephine County. We want to think regionally along that. Because they're running out of places to put people over there when that thing comes to town. So they're going to move those over there.
Sarah, does the engineering specifically lay out, like you're looking to do dovetail in with the existing at Whitehorse? I'd like the engineering, and even if it costs a little bit, we'll shore that up.
For Whitehorse or Schroeder?
For Schroeder. That says this is a 6-inch line that can facilitate 10 to 15 more RV spots at the end. Because I feel like 6 may not do it.
So you're asking for them to go.
That language in there that it was looked at.
That it was looked at and it'll accommodate.
And it is sufficient.
Yes.
What do you say, a 4-inch and then city said no, go to a 6-inch?
To plug into an 8-inch.
Yes, because there's an 8-inch.
The street, and look what the 8 feet, which is all the park and all the neighboring surroundings.
Well, 6-inch will be more than enough to expand on.
Want engineering data.
I want the engineering data in this thing to say that.
Yeah.
That it'll accommodate. You know, when you do your master plan next couple of years, that answer has already been done. That question has been asked and answered by an engineer, and it's in that preliminary thing for the last existing development of Schroeder, where it just says that you can plug into it, no problem. Question answered. That would be really great. And if that costs more, we will pay for that.
Okay, so I will call them.
We'll figure out a way to get that covered. And that's no problem. And then I have no problem going forward with this.
Okay.
So, sounds good.
Perfect.
Okay.
I think it's exciting.
It is. Well, there's so many things Sarah's doing out there. It's really, really great. So we're going to have to talk about the water system. And if there's a separate, you know, we can't discuss in public on the little potential litigation. But hopefully we won't need to have a problem at Indian Mary this next year, but I know you're going to try to do something at Lake Selmec, and we need to figure out a way that, you know, what we're talking about, you weren't at the last executive session, and we need to make sure that legal is putting, you know, the appropriate department is in the room or invited every time we talk about something that's relevant to them, because that came up. And
okay.
So you and I are going to have to talk about how are you moving those things around. And
okay. Yes.
To solve your water issues. Hopefully, it won't be a big problem this year. But
yeah.
I have a question on the Lake Selmec Bridge. How long is that project going to take? And does that just block off that whole side of the lake?
You're talking about the Spillane Bridge replacement.
Yeah, the Spillane Bridge project.
Public Works is completely heading this entire thing. However, I believe that the shutdown date is the 1st of August or the very last of July 1st, and it's projected to be a 3-month closure. And yes, it 100% shuts down Lake Shore Drive over the spillway and segregates our park completely.
So when you get to the lake and you turn left, you're not going to be able to go past the lodge. And
I'm not even sure they'll let you turn left because there's nothing to get to after.
Yeah, you're going to be a right for Osprey Loop or go back out to the main highway and come in off the alternative route to get over to Mallard.
So you have to take Deer Creek Road, right?
I believe that's correct.
Deer Creek.
Yeah.
I'm completely unfamiliar with that.
It's just one road prior next to the grocery store.
Okay.
You can turn left there, and you go out, and you loop back and stuff. It's actually distance-wise maybe an extra 2 miles.
Okay.
It's really not that much further, but it isn't intuitive. It's like, wait a second, I want to get to the lake. Why am I turning a mile early? Well, that's the road that gets there now.
Yeah, okay.
So there's totally access to that side of the lake.
And it's towards the tail end of the season. So
it is, yes. They did move it out, which helps. Typically, we start seeing the blue-green algae bloom about that time, and so it just reduces.
Kind of hot. Yeah. We do need a conversation about how this is all being, not the bridge, but the spillway, whose cost that is going to become. Really, my philosophy on it, and I've been thinking about it for over a year, close to two, it's really not infrastructure that's Parks' responsibility solely. It's kind of a county infrastructure. Does that make sense? It's not. It does facilitate the park and all of that, but it started out as just a really small. There's some concrete that's chipping in the spillway, and now they're questioning the integrity of the entire dam. It's like,
after the Oroville thing, and
the timing is really not good.
The timing is, you know, for everybody to start putting that under the microscope is there.
Yeah. So. Well, it could be positive from getting, I mean, it is there, the state marine boards or somebody's number one issue or something like that, which could be really good for Grant.
Is there a fish and wildlife aspect to it for Grant?
I think there's always a fish and wildlife element.
Keeping the lake at a certain level for the North Carolina chub or whatever.
Structural right. integrity is probably the biggest one.
Right now there's no fish ladder, so the salmon can't come back up, although they can get out. From my understanding, but how this was built, the spillway is directly tied to the bridge. You can't do one without the other. Right. So they're one entity. And then my other thing I've come to notice is when you look at other dams all across the state of Oregon and all across America, really, it is rare that a Parks Department would actually be the entity in charge of the dam. It is very common when you even look at the Lost Creek Lake and stuff around here that it's either Public Works or Army Corps of Engineers or another entity that maintains the actual dam, and then Parks maintains all the recreation
right.
around it.
Right.
And so we're unique
yeah,
that we're in charge of it all just because of the way it was built and put in charge of. Yeah.
It's not a park's responsibility.
It's in a park, but it's not their
exactly.
responsibility.
Exactly.
It's so much more than the park.
It's either a public works
Absolutely.
Element or it's a general fund. It's a fiscal element, and that's that's where I.
Well, with the Orville thing, I see opportunity on a federal level to get a grant to fix that. If there's
part
of the question
so.
Is quality and gee, you know, where we say okay, we'll put a little concrete here and some rebar pointing this way and tie it all together, we're going to be fine. And they go, oh no, boy, you don't want to have another Orville thing on your hands. Well, no, we don't.
And I know that they're applying for grants. The application calls for almost $1 million in matching funds. That is with $3 million coming in for the $4 million project. But I think that's the question of, with those matching funds, where is that matching fund coming from if we can't secure another grant to partner with it? So Public Works has been doing all the work with the engineers and writing those grants. But the last one did just get submitted.
I almost wonder if it might be worth hiring somebody who facilitates dams types of stuff. To be a consultant on securing outside resources, and I think Arthur could probably help looking into how that how it's financed.
Language.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a like a Mall Foster and Alonji, that people that we hired to do the Demick campus thing. They not them. I don't think it's them. I don't know that that's in their wheelhouse, but somebody out there does this kind of thing, dam replacement or fixing, and they will know all of the revenue streams. Public Works not knowing that they might be tagged with some of this may not be 100% incentivized to say, we're looking for every opportunity. Maybe that's not even in their wheelhouse. They built roads. They don't really do dams. And so I'd just like to explore that. And I think we probably should have started that a year ago, but the second best time is today. So if we don't mind working on that, Arthur, we can do that together. Maybe a Mall Foster is a good place to start. They may know somebody. Okay, anything else? Good
Not
stuff.
For today, I think.
Good stuff.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Oh, we should probably talk about this. So, Arthur and I have been discussing, you had a question about your work crews
yes.
coming up in next year, and I've learned more about it. So the work crews is something that the Parks has been using for probably a decade to supplement their maintenance of their facilities. Is that a seasonal thing, or is that year-round?
No, year-round. We've been receiving 3 work crews a week for as long as anybody knows the knowledge of, and this fiscal year we got dropped to 2 work crews a week. And
those are historically paid for out of 2008 Title III funds. Those were pretty much, you could use them for just about anything. Last year, we spent all of that remaining funds, and about a $200,000 last check went out the door of those. The new Title III funds, which we have about $1 million of, you cannot use for this purpose. And so there isn't any resources available to supplement that.
Now you
the last year, I think Nate was providing those at 100% subsidy. So it might have been 2 years that we used the last of the Title III funds. Last year he shored it up within his own budget to accommodate Parks at 3 crews a week.
2 crews a week this last year. Yes.
So in order to continue that program, 2 crews a week twice a week? So it's just
one crew twice a week, so two crews per week.
Two crews per week. So that's a $40,000 annual cost. It's a $900 a day. Correction subsidizes it at $500 a day, so it really only costs $400. So that's $800 a week times 50 weeks. I assume 50 weeks. That's a $40,000 click to maintain current levels of correction crews.
Yeah.
And so,
what do they do? Clear brush, mow lawns.
All of the above. They really focus on blackberry removal. They help pick up the leaves. They help us buck the trees in the wood this time of year and do the firewood. They can be assigned to clear trails. They're a force that do any kind of larger projects that we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be devastating to parks if we saw absolutely no work crews next year, but we're just not prepared to take and assign $42,000 out of our budget. I'd rather suffer for a year and
see what
figure it out and tell the public why certain things aren't being done.
$40,000 doesn't hire FTEs or even part-time employees to do whatever they do, correct?
We basically could probably fund one full-time person with that, but hardly.
Yeah, and he's not going to.
It wouldn't accomplish what the crew.
No, it wouldn't.
Not even close to what the crews get done.
No.
Do they provide their own weed eaters and wheelbarrows or whatever?
Yeah, and then depending, of course, who the crew lead is and then who is on the crew for the day, you could get tons and tons done, or sometimes it's not so much. But it really just depends. And overall, they do a great job of helping us maintain all of our facilities.
Yeah. So I've been struggling with this because we knew that the 2008 Title III funds they're not getting replenished, they're not being reauthorized in that same fashion, and so those were just, I don't know, they're kind of one-time dollars, and I don't know where we get the money to do the $40,000 a year for the crew. So Arthur and I have been talking about it, and I don't know what the answer is. I've been trying to come up with creative solutions, like Nate could charge. He has other people who purchase those services, ODOT and such, and he supplements theirs the same way he does parks at $500 a day. My thought was, well, what if you don't supplement it the same way, and you charge them $600 for a $900 crew, and you take that $200 and you apply it to offsetting parks, so maybe it only costs $200 per crew per day, and you know that sounds like a whole lot. It's a great deal. It's really almost impossible.
But don't you have to treat everybody equally?
I don't think so.
That surprises me.
No.
I think the internal county services can support each other separate than creating a contract with an outside entity.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure on all the legal terms there.
The $900, you know, just depends on the entity, I would imagine. I would imagine they have the discretion to do that. It's not the same as other things. So if that was possible and they felt comfortable with trying to, even making an adjustment that, you know, it's the other way around, it's $500 and you go from 4 to 3 or 4 to 2 because they're contracting out a lot more. It's not an even deal. Something like that to bring the cost down to a manageable level of maybe $20,000, and I think that could be accomplished in your budget. 40 sounds unattainable, but if we can break it up into something that's a little more palatable, that's what I'm working towards. I don't know. Does that sound like something we should be exploring?
I think it's going to have to be done because you certainly can't be without it.
Yeah.
I don't think we want to see what it looks like for the parks to not have $40,000, which isn't $40,000 worth of work. If you had to go out to the private sector and pay for it,
you'd never get it.
It's a hundred. It's $100,000 worth of work.
At least.
Yeah.
How much do you use private lawnmowers?
We don't.
Yeah.
No.
You don't hire out any landscaping?
We don't have any contractors for any kind of work other than our tree service, and then we bring in our park aides in the summer. That costs us about $188,000 to employ. I think that's up to 17 individuals for
6 months.
6 months in the summer, kind of a bell curve on the employment there.
Yeah.
But yes, other than that, we do all of our own work. If our guys can't get to it, it doesn't get done.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll work on it.
We have a great relationship with corrections, and that will continue no matter what. They're great. Like, they have a training day coming up, I think, on the 13th or something, they don't have their employees available to take the work crews, so they call us and say, hey, instead of canceling these work crews, can your guys take them out? And so we say yes. So that's a great thing where our guys go and monitor them for the entire day.
The other thing is Collections uses the park's yard. They don't pay anything for that.
Correct.
So they house all their vans and their utilities, trailers, and all that stuff at the parks department and don't pay.
And we gave up a couple of our buildings for that.
So do you guys pay for the space that they utilize?
We do
storage?
Not. Pay into bomb for anything other than our main building.
But they utilize the main building?
They're utilizing building half of building C.
And they pay for that?
I don't think anybody's paying into the bomb fees with that. Parks pays into our main park shop and our office with the bomb fees, and that's it. I believe that building B and C are not paid in, and then those back buildings that are failing with the roof coming in, those also at some point, when our budget took a dive, we stopped paying into bomb fees, and as a result, those buildings have never been fixed, and we eventually will have to look at re-roofing them to see.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to get out there.
Come on down. We'll put you to work.
Swim on down, dude.
It's funny, I saw your car there the other day when I drove by on Ringgeck, because there was a bottleneck at the South Y.
Yeah.
It really is every day.
It's bad traffic.
And then later on that evening, I was like, oh, I know what she's working on because she sent me her budget. And I looked at all 6 spreadsheets on my phone, and I could read them all. I mean, it did take me a lot longer, over an hour, but I was just like, wow, it's really good. Very readable. Appreciate it.
Everything used to just be lumped into a few categories, and we're utilizing all of the coding, thank you, finance, to be able to put them in appropriate categories. So.
I learned some things about their budget that I, you know, I've been following for 6 years. I didn't know, so it's pretty cool.
Very good.
Yeah, excellent. I think breaking out contract services would be an interesting thing to do because it does kind of lump a bunch of different things I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, you're spending $11,000 at Alameda on contract services. I would be impressed with myself if that was the actual number, and it could be. But anyway, you know, what does that entail? And it's the sewage pumping or you know, all sorts of stuff that. Employees out there that they contract with in the summer. She's got it all broken out about how much every one of them uses, and pretty interesting, and the revenues.
And I have an Excel sheet that partners that contract services one, for instance, so it'll break up how many vault toilets, what location, how many times a year, and we do that with personnel and everything. So
that's really cool.
Is something if there's room and you want it. You know, to be attached to the public or even just on our website for people.
I think what you provided would give enough people, enough for people to digest.
Okay,
so.
Perfect.
Great.
Never enough.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
Human Resources isn't here. Finance report and business update. Break out the popcorn. That's you, Mr. O'Hare. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you.
Good morning.
Wonderful day. Wonderful day.
I really appreciated our conversation yesterday, and ironically, I think I'm coming around from your point of view. Don't close too much. I think you might. I think we can find some common ground. So,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
No.
Absolutely.
We were
work
talking
together.
About the trusts, the different. We're setting up the forestry trust, and I'd like that fiscally done this
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
We can put in the parameters of the
ordinance.
But we can establish a resolution
yes.
this year to set up that forestry trust. And I'd like to see us do that before we
yes.
publish the budget. And I think that's been the directive of this board. And then we'll work on the resolution. And I've been jotting down notes and guidelines about what I think that the board wants to see for that
okay.
ordinance to govern it. And we'll probably present that shortly after the budget is finalized.
Mm-hmm. That should work fine.
Yeah.
I've got a few resolutions. There's a couple of funds that I want to close.
Yeah.
And then establish the Forest Trust by resolution and then also reaffirm the reserve funds, which have to happen every 10 years. So you'll, in the next month or so, I'll have two or three resolutions that deal with the funds structure for the county.
For some context, we had 52.
We had a lot of funds.
Over 50 different
yeah.
funds that were had a, you know, he'd inherited over the years, just
yeah.
one fund after the other. And a lot of these were one-time input of funds, and they're one-time and it's like they need to be sunset. They need to be
they're not relevant anymore.
They take up a page and they're not a good accounting structure. It's not the way it should be.
It clutters. It's basically too busy, and it's too.
Are there any of those funds that have money left over in them that's just sitting there and never going to go anywhere?
That's where
we've
those
been making progress on
resolutions.
Those.
You'll see a couple of those. We'll be dealing with a couple of funds. The
McKenzie Trust.
The McKenzie Trust we took care of. The Child Seat Fund. We don't do child.
That was left
seats
over from
anymore
for children and families, as an example. And there's $2,000 in that.
Yeah.
And there's a child seat program that the Public Safety and Grants Pass facilitates. We should just appropriate those funds. They do a really good job. They talk about that every week, about how many child seats they installed and inspected on the city's weekly report. Let's give them the resources.
That's what people across the pond. We, you know, when I ever ask about it, they go, well, yeah, how long has that money been sitting there?
Yeah.
15 years. And how much is in there? $3.5 million? We
don't have numbers.
No, we don't have.
But I mean, it's just an example of, you know, that nobody bothers to look to see what you've got. And say, if you say, hey, we don't even do that anymore.
No.
Right. Yeah.
Our
we don't have a
swimming.
80,000,
88,000, and the McKenzie Trust was a big one.
That was the big one.
The child seat, there's $2,000 or something like that.
Maybe I'm wrong, but when money gets set aside to do something, I think it should be. I think we should do that. They don't give you money for sidewalks and your CMAQ funds, and then just so you can sit on it and say you've got a big CMAQ fund bundle out here. They
want to be CI to eye on that, and we'll be bringing up that issue this afternoon with the solid waste agency sitting on. I think the last time I checked, over $1 million, and that is not what the tipping fees were intended for.
No, it's not.
And so we're gonna. I've asked the delegates. That's a good segue into this. The delegates from the county who sit on the Solid Waste Agency to come and make a report to the board about vision, things they're doing, things they're gonna do, and their budget, and that sort of stuff. So that'll be coming in the next month or so.
Is that are we gonna have how that ties into? Because as we step into this cleaning up of
the whole
compounds and whatnot.
Yep.
Good segue. I'm scheduled to go to the Solid Waste Agency Fund to request our share of the current Dimmick A Street remediation. So I put in an application for $22,000 to offset our costs of cleaning up the asbestos and lead and underground storage tanks.
Remediate solid waste stuff.
Right. And so that's in 2 weeks, I think. Maybe 3 weeks at their next meeting.
Let's go to that together.
Okay. Yeah. That'll be fun. Okay. And then, ready?
Sorry.
So
segues first, right?
Yes.
Hopefully that'll be less segues.
Well, all the budgets we have all the budgets from all the departments, so hopefully all the managers have at least talked with each of the liaisons about what their purpose and goals and accomplishments. We are asking for more statistical information, more metrics, key performance indicators, whatever you want to call them, in our continuing effort to improve our budget book and to make it a more citizen-friendly and informative book. As you'll notice, last year we consolidated a lot of the schedules, A, B, C, D, E's, and took those out and gave everybody a consistent look with a graph and a chart and a similar structure so that, and then for those folks who want to delve into more of the detail, we had more of the detail in the back of the book as an appendix. And also we had even an excessive amount of detail on our website so that folks, if they really wanted to get into line item of what data entry is going into the funds, we had it on the website for them to look at. So we're trying to do that, and it's all under the umbrella of best practices. We submit our budget every year to the Government Finance Officers Association, and they review it. And they give us feedback as to what looks good, what's proficient, what's not. And so we try to make those incremental improvements over time. This is the fifth year that we've received the award, and in fact, I have the notification that our last year's budget, it takes them about 6 months, 7 months to review it, but last year's budget has been given that budget award. So we're continuing to along those lines.
That's right? Really, it's not a small measure that I think Rosemary under, well, Chris is the one who actually
yes.
applied of her own volition,
right.
I think, with direction
right.
from
well, with
Rosemary
the support and encouragement,
Parker,
yes.
To apply for that and submit the budget and get it reviewed and have the third party take a look and say, you know, what could you be doing better? I think
right.
that was the original intent, and they came back and said, you know, actually what you're doing really is pretty doggone good, and here's an award.
Yeah, first year submission, we got the award, which is unusual.
Yeah.
People usually take one or two tries before they get up to the where it needs to be.
The city grant passes on like year 27 or
yeah.
something like that there. And it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with the public screaming and hollering and transparency and where do I find this and you can't show me that. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, we still have made really dramatic improvements. I think that cover sheet with the graph and like the balance deal at the front,
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
style, you know, first page, that's what I would say 90% of the public wants to see. Is
right.
what are you doing with this fund? And then if there's 10% of the population that really wants to delve in to more detail, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think while we're on the budget and the calendar per se,
yes.
there was some concern last year with the budget being presented to the budget committee at the first budget workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking at some of those ad hoc people who went out and took a look at other polling, there were a couple of other counties that did exactly the same. It's not out of the norm.
Right.
But I think
city grants pass, you get it day of, I think, yeah.
In an effort to try it was totally misleading what those presentations were talking about, because it's not about the first day you get it, it's about how long that you actually had it before it was provided
approved.
And then it was approved.
Right.
That could be 3 months, you know. So how much time do you really need to look at it, and what effect is it gonna have by getting it 3 weeks earlier before the first budget workshop, when we really, even the budget committee doesn't really delve into too much of the budget on the first workshop.
Legally, the budget committee, once that budget is published and available publicly, because once I make it available to the budget committee, I have to make it available to the public legally. And once I do that, the budget committee cannot talk to each other about the budget. You can't talk to
so
you or
you.
You
get out 2 weeks ahead of time to facilitate.
Yeah.
I know who you're
yeah.
talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And, oh, yeah, we'll get it to you 2 weeks ahead of time, and then that's it. The budget committee from then on couldn't talk about anything.
Couldn't talk about it.
Legally, they're bound.
All conversation ends, and you can only meet in a public
and
meeting.
And I would imagine, depends. Technically, the board can't discuss much of changing that budget, obviously, after it's been published, without
right.
convening the budget committee.
Right.
Because
right.
it's in there. It leaves us as a board and goes to the budget committee as a governing body over the budget.
Yeah.
And so that also hamstrings us a little bit. But I think we can accomplish like a week ahead of time or something like that.
This time with the timing of the calendar and our first meeting on May 2nd, the Tuesday, the May 2nd, our plans are to have it available the prior week.
Great.
So that should satisfy the need.
And that's dependable. Your
yeah.
explanation of not being able to talk about it anyway as
right.
soon as it's released, I think that's very defendable. Say, you know what? We should be able to talk about, you know, with our various departments.
Right.
Should be able to talk about it right up until the day that the budget committee meets.
And some of the information last year was just false information. You know,
mm-hmm.
people, some folks claim that the budget committee even got the budget, you know, way earlier than the public got the budget. Well, that's illegal. You can't do that. Once you give it to the committee, you have to make it available to the public. So some of the information was pretty.
Email went out for everybody to be able to get access to the books is when it was
yeah.
published online, made
yeah.
available here.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
And then the role of the budget committee, I think, is yeah, it needs to be a little. And I have, at least in my email list, I have various pieces of information. I sent out something yesterday to say, you know, confirm that you're still on the committee, that you still realize May 2nd is our next meeting, our first meeting, but then also to just give a brief update of what the budget committee, the purpose behind the budget committee. I have another email that I'll send out in the near future that will say, you know, what is the role of the committee? What can you decide? What are you not responsible for deciding? Just to help the committee members clarify in their mind what their role is and what their piece is in the whole process. Because it's not the whole process. The committee itself is kind of in the middle of the process. The board develops goals and policies. You assign that to me to put the budgets together in conformance with those goals and policies. Budget committee is the public ear to allow public comment and take in that public comment. Then it goes back to the board. After the committee approves the budget, it goes back to the board for them to adopt the budget. So the committee is really a piece in the middle of the whole process. They're not the whole process. They're a piece in the middle of the process. So yes, we've got the first committee meeting on Tuesday, May 2nd, and we're still in line for that. The budget committee has the authority to change, or the responsibility to establish the following meetings. We're looking at the calendar for the commissioners, and there were a couple of meetings on the proposed budget calendar that may not work anymore because some of the folks are going to be gone. So, but anyway, at least at the first meeting, the budget committee will set the subsequent meetings. Next week, I'll be bringing an email or a contract to you for the new auditor for Moss Adams. Legal is reviewing the contract now, and then I'll have it on next Thursday's for your review, and then hopefully off to Wednesday for approval.
Did you want to look at those other proposals? Because Moss Adams has been kind of selected.
I don't think so. I think, you know,
I did a review with the counties that were listed as similar counties, and mm-hmm. I sent out an email, a text message to three or four of them. They all responded that Moss Adams has done good work. And that's what I really wanted.
You know, I could go through all the legal speak and I wouldn't understand it anyway.
I just wanted counties who have used them to say thumbs up. We would recommend them, because the last time it didn't go real well. Right. We want a solid.
Well, the name sounds familiar. Moss Adams, we did some work for them in the city, and they were always.
And I asked, when I contacted a couple, I contacted Jackson County, uses Moss Adams, Klamath County uses Moss Adams, and has this particular individual is the in charge of their audit. So that was the questions I asked them. How is this individual? How is the staff turnover? Do we get new people every year, or do you have some consistency? You know, do you have to train people brand new every year, or are you consistent with your group? Do they seem competent? Do they respond in a timely manner? So it all came back excellent. So I think we'll do.
Okay.
I think we'll have a good thing. So that's next week. Legal review and a Hugo Hills. I just wanted to mention that we're moving forward on that. The working with Oregon Housing, as you know, Options is transitioning their clients out of Hugo Hills into other facilities. And so we're looking possibly end of April, probably more like end of May, that Hugo Hills will be empty. There'll be no more people in there. And at that point in time, the affordability period, or the responsibility, the restriction to have an affordability period, meaning that you have to have 4 units that are low-income units, that will transfer over to Ramsey. And under the auspices of Options.
It stays with Options.
It stays with Options.
No longer restriction at the Hills.
Correct. It'll move over to it'll stay with Options, move over to Ramsey, which is their facility that they run, and then Hugo will be back into the lap of the county to be sold or rented.
Is there any decommissioning that we need to do out there, you know, because it is going to be empty? Is there any decommissioning, you know, shut the water heaters off?
Oh, that,
Ryan
yeah.
Handles all of that.
Yeah.
And Bob will take care of that.
And I have talked with Mike Watson and Ryan on both of those.
And how about security issues? I mean, you set something like that wide open, and before you know it, you've got a hobo camp in there.
We have a weekly inspection that's done at all of our facilities that are out Ryan facilitates that, and he will do the same thing with that. And they're secured as best as possible, and we take every precaution. That one, our ideal is to reutilize it for something. The best deterrent is somebody else is in there.
Yeah.
We are already working on potential alternatives for that.
How many rooms are out there?
Actually, I don't think this is a facility. I don't think I've ever really gone
to. Yeah, there's 16 units, 16 rooms. It can house 16.
And a unit is?
It's an apartment, a room.
It has an apartment. It's got a sink and a bathroom and everything all that stuff.
I think they're just rooms.
I think they're central.
It's centralized facilities.
Yeah.
And one of the repurposing opportunities is maybe veterans housing.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You know, it might be a good, a VA, because there's some, I would imagine, some money available there.
There is, and UCAN's looking at trying to garner some so that they can, you know, change it up how it needs to be to accommodate veterans and those services, and getting maybe some services in there.
The homeless thing last night at the library.
So. Good. Mm-hmm. But all that will come before the board, everything that's been worked on.
It's moving ahead. We have some communication with Kimber at Oregon Housing. Oregon Housing oversees that program to a certain extent, because we used state bonds to refurbish that unit to make it appropriate for secured treatment. And so they have their fingers in the pie. So we'll pay off the loan once the...
You have to buy them out of that?
Yeah, we have to pay them off. It's $147,000 is the remaining balance on the loan. So once that transitions out, then we'll have the opportunity to pay off the loan, and then that relieves us of any obligation toward Oregon Housing for anything, and we can do with it as we will.
So it just came to me.
And $147,000, you hope to recover that if you sell it or...
Correct. Or rental, if we can get a $100 per room, which is a reasonable rate, that would be $1,600 a month in rental. So,
can we assume the loan, or do you have to pay it off?
It's an Oregon loan. It's an loan through Oregon Housing, so it's bonds. So we're paying off the bond debt.
It's a good question, and actually, just kind of, I would rather not use the property reserve funds to pay off that loan if.
We can take over the payment.
It's a lot harder to try to get money from, UCAN or Veteran Services to pay us. But if you were paying off a housing loan that this qualified for, and they qualified to get grants to pay off such and such a loan, where they could get grants to pay the county to just go to property reserve, you know what I mean? There's a direct tie to paying a mortgage that was already set up for a housing issue as opposed to paying us. And so I think that we would want to explore that before we pay off that mortgage, that bond, that loan, through Oregon Housing, because it could qualify where it wouldn't if we paid it off. You know what I mean? I don't know. I want to explore that before we go ahead and write the check and pay that off. Because it's still money going into property reserve, so to speak. It's just a roundabout way if instead of them paying us, they're paying off the bond, the mortgage.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, the county is on the hook to pay the mortgage. So even currently, Options pays us, and then we turn around and pay Oregon Housing the mortgage rate.
So you can continue now.
Yes.
Rather than say, okay, Options pulled out, now we have to pay that bond off. We don't, do we?
Well, I think we
Oregon Housing
do.
Would say you have to be using it for that purpose, but maybe Veterans Housing qualifies as purpose.
They would take the place of Options. And
that could be.
As a client.
I'll look at that. I'll look at that.
I don't want to remove the option of having outside funds paying for a facility as opposed to us just utilizing property reserve money that we would eventually get if we sold it, but that could be.
And you're taking it
chance
to whether you're going to get it if you sold it.
Yeah.
Well, or rent if we can find an appropriate tenant to go in there and give us.
Work.
Yeah.
We'll explore that.
Yeah, I'll look at that.
Thanks.
I'll look at that. And then the final thing is that we have met with three of the unions now. This biweekly payroll, the favorite topic of everybody gets paid. So we've met with three of the unions, AFSCME, Sheriff's Association and FOPO. And Sheriff and FOPO were 100% on board. AFSCME did their survey, and basically came up with 50% of the people said yes. Another 30% said, I don't care either way. 20% said no. Rodney, the union rep, said you could see the demographic divide right down there. The 20%er said no, they were the old timers. They've been here for years. They're used to a monthly payroll. They don't want change. But all the younger workers and everybody else said either yes, overwhelming yes, or I don't care. So we haven't met with SEIU yet, and we need to do that to just for good relationship issues and you know, discuss the topic with them.
It isn't a binding element. The unions don't have a veto authority on this issue.
Right. It sounds like they're on board.
Oh, I think everybody is, basically.
They're not adamantly opposed.
Right. And it's a benefit. I mean, when you look at it from an employee's point of view, you know, I especially a new employee, start working here and I have to wait a month before I get paid, or I work for, you know, fill-in or temp. Yeah.
The big thing for me was not whether or not they were in favor or opposed. It was, if you're opposed, why are you opposed? And
right.
It's something we can accommodate in this transition. This transition is going to happen. It's just a matter of how, and if there's something that somebody in that 20% of the union, and there's something in there they want different, you know, what day of the month or something like that. That's,
if there's
that
a legitimate concern.
I have a question. Does it affect their withholding or anything in any way to go every two, bi-monthly or monthly?
It makes absolutely no change in your taxes or in your tax liability, in what you owe, in your PERS, and nothing.
Well, I got a bonus once at a former employer, and it was a pretty good size bonus, and then they put it all on one month as withholding, and I said, here, just, you can have this back, and they say, why? And they said, I said, because, you know, I get less money than the bonus and my pay combined. I'm getting less money than my pay.
Mm-hmm.
I took a knock in pay because it showed I made $186,000 a year, and
right.
I said, just
right.
take back. And they said, well, no, I know that you're going to get it back in April when you file your taxes. I said, walk in there and tell Al Klassen that he'll get his money back in 4 months and see what he does to you. You'll be walking the street by lunch. And she goes, okay. I said, just take it back.
Well, surprisingly enough, the IRS has a biweekly payroll tax chart, so they've got a calculator out. Oh, yeah.
And everything's the same. Okay.
Yeah, it's absolutely no change.
But I was wondering, you know, some of the old guard, like me, some of the old guard maybe hasn't had experience in the past with that, and that's why they're questioning it now. Whereas the young people, now they have a biweekly, and it's normal.
Yeah.
We don't give bonuses, so that's a good. There's the one.
Don't have to worry about that.
I don't have to worry about that here.
The other thing is that we have 160 employees currently who are doing mid-month draw.
Yeah.
And that we have two payroll systems, basically.
Already.
That's unacceptable to me.
No. Standardization is, you need to standardize it just for
this will alleviate
the amount of man hours it takes to process that mid-month payroll.
Ratify.
And this will alleviate the...
I'm not going to eliminate the 160 people who need the option of a mid-month draw. Okay, if you need that, that's fine. Everybody's going to get paid twice a month.
Sure.
Those are the rules.
Yeah.
So for those staff that are listening, that's the reason, that's the rationale. It's just, we've got to be efficient. And, you know, that we're paying you more often than once a month, I don't see how that's a bad thing. And if you have set up for your financial accounting that everything goes out at one time in the month, you're going to have to spend 5 minutes online. If it's so easy, then it should be pretty easy to change that date and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that.
Yeah.
Either go to give them up, bi-monthly, and everybody's the same, or we go bi-annually and we get paid every 6 months. Is that a really close
those are the rules? Sounds good.
Yeah.
You're not smiling. Usually you smile.
I'm going to do one.
Yeah.
We still love Terry.
Bi-monthly, so that's moving it. We did state to the Sheriff Association and the others that we will give them a full 3 months for transition, so that their membership can prepare for the change in dates. So
I was ideally looking at a fiscal year change, so July 1 we would move to a bi-monthly system, but we can't do that, and I think that's totally reasonable. To give them that 3 month ahead of time, that buffer.
Right.
So, but I do want an expectation that by August, by September.
Right.
September is my thing, because that's the first, that's the third, fourth quarter or something. That would work for me. But we started September.
I don't see any problem with that. I think that'll work. And it really doesn't matter exactly when you start. It could be August 1, September 1, October 1. We could start in the middle of the month, the 15th or the 12th or whatever. Probably easier conceptually and for everybody's budget to start at the beginning of the month. So then you would get a payday on the 7th for the prior month. So you have your full pay for that month of September on September 7th. And then every 2 weeks you'll start getting additional payroll. So really the month of September you'll come out of ahead of the game, just in a strictly cash flow consideration, because you'll get paid on September 7th for your full month, and then you'll get paid on September 15th, and then on September 30th or whatever it is. So that's what I brought.
We had I would like to suggest that when you're building the budget this year, that we introduce a new concept of appropriating the general fund tax revenue, roughly $4.2 million. And so how the pie chart is currently divvied up, or the dollar bill of your 58 cents, it's including things like the clerk's office and surveyors, public health gets a portion, so it's planning. And really that isn't a reflection of the prioritization, I think, of where this new board is wanting to go. It's a new time being on shared receipts, ONC revenue. That's the outside funds. It's not secure rural schools of a federal grant. It's actual money that dollar for dollar of 50% revenue that was generated off of the 18 ONC counties in a formula of distribution of about 12.5% of every dollar that's a shared receipt coming to Josephine County. And this last year it means $2.3 million. We really don't know where next year is going to be. And so I think to reflect the priority, it really needs to say that 58 cents, that $4.1 million that's generated through people's property taxes, really 100% of that goes to law enforcement. That's the highest number one priority I think that this board has set out from day one. And that should be reflected. When you give a pie chart of the 58 cents, it shouldn't have all those other elements. Right. Those monies are ONC, they're other revenues, and the property tax dollars are the one that comes out of the guy's pocket. He writes his check to Josephine County. Where does that 58 cents go to? 100% of it goes to law enforcement. Right. I think that should be reflected in the budget, if that's a direction this board is wanting to adopt.
I just, in pondering that proposal, gosh, I wish this would have happened 4 or 5 years ago. But it couldn't.
I think
4 or 5 years ago.
Is the ONC.
The ONC is what triggered the ability to be able to have a proposal like this.
Yeah.
Without the ONC, you didn't have anything that was going to make it happen. And this is the end of secure rural schools. ONC now, we're partially funding ourselves off of natural resources, and we're actually earning that money rather than getting a handout on secure rural schools. But the two don't add up, but they don't cancel each other out. But I think that,
the county
listening to the complaints over all the years of levies, that would have answered that question 5 years ago, and we probably wouldn't be sitting here yakking about it today. But I think I think now, certainly with the timber receipts coming in, I think it's now a good time to have that conversation if we're going to make that change, I think.
Right. We haven't been here since 1994, and I like the idea that you can take, let's break up that shared receipt element, show all of the different services that are provided by those shared receipt timber revenues. So our federal campaign to talk to legislators about forest management reform, it isn't all about just about law enforcement.
No.
It's about the 100 other services that are provided through the clerk's office, the surveyors, public health, all of them, planning, community development, economic development. Any one of those that's on that portion of those revenues. But really, the highest priority that I think the public has for their tax dollar,
for their money,
for their dollar, is to go to law enforcement. So that's where it should go.
So 100% of the 58 cents of the property tax revenue to the public safety, sheriff, DA,
and if
law enforcement.
Law enforcement.
And if the levy passes, then their contribution, because part of their cost of doing business is the internal service fund. They're still going to pay that back.
No, they pay payroll. I mean,
that's right.
I don't think anybody's going to work if there's no payroll going on.
You would be able to pay their bill for them unless you've got, it would be 8% if it passes and still remain at 10 if it doesn't, correct?
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it'll be at least down to 8, at least.
It's a pretty good forecast. Probably be. When I took office, we were at 8.25, and the general fund was 110. 446 employees and 154 people in the jail. That's the day one stat for me. When we were really, we were funded a lot better than we were.
Well, and back in the day also, I mean, one of the reasons that we dedicated the ONC revenues to the law enforcement effort was because the ONC revenues was the lion's share of what we brought in. When you're talking about $10 million or even as it was diminishing down to $8 million or $4 million, you know, it's a lot of money. And it was much more than what we brought in property taxes. So we were dedicating the lion's share over to law enforcement. Well, now those things have switched places. We're getting $2.3 million in shared receipts, and we're bringing in close to $4 million in property tax.
And I think the question was brought to me the other day, and that's why I asked for that pie chart. I need to know when I'm talking to people, where does that 58 cents go? And I said, you know, honest to goodness, penny by penny, I can't tell you. But now I do know.
Right.
So, you know, call through the graph, and it's pretty...
Yeah, and that's a graph that's in our budget book and has been in our budget book for a couple of years. So,
but for 17-18, when we build the budget, I think
100%
be
to the
Where does my 58 cents go? Every dime of it goes to
law enforcement. Yeah. Okay.
While you're still here, we are working on tying up the final community wildfire protection plan. It's been an ongoing project since I've been here. We had a contractor, did a lot of good work. Couldn't get it over the finish line, hired a new contractor, all using Title III funds, so no general fund tax dollars have been used for this, but I think we're getting to a point where we're going to have it completed. However, it's a pretty substantial document, and I haven't had a chance to review it. I've been the only commissioner out of the two counties who's been at the table from day one to today, and hopefully for when it's finished, and I really want some time. It's got to accomplish a couple of different things, and I don't care how long it takes or what we're doing for resources on it. It's got to do these things, and I want to make sure that we've got time to do that. The end of the contract, I believe, is coming at either the beginning of May or end of April, and I'd like to extend it to the end of the fiscal year, which would be the end of June. Jackson County is already working on extending their contract with the contractor, and I think we should probably try to amend ours as well, so just extend it by a month and a half or whatever it is, so that we have appropriate time for not only me to review it, it would be, you know.
Get us beyond the levy, get us beyond the election, get us beyond budget.
We'd have some breathing room to be able to do it.
That's pretty important.
So.
That's Jackson and Josephine, correct?
It is. We're going to be the first in the nation to do a joint CWPP, Community Wildfire Protection Plan. It really makes sense. We work together regionally. Our plans have never really differed that much. But now you'd have one website to go to. You'll have one plan to look at. And it really will speak to, you know, a drawing of resources in an event of a fire and a drawing of resources together to combat that, to mitigate the fire potential within our region. And so we're very similar. We're 1 and 2 for the most complex system of ownership in all 600 western counties. So you look at that checkerboard pattern, nobody's is more complex than us. And nobody in the state experiences catastrophic wildfire the way Josephine and Jackson County has. We get 25% of the average fires in any given year are going to happen in Josephine and Jackson County.
So, you know, the other 70%, 75% is distributed out throughout the other 30.
Plus the resource is burning. The resource is valuable here. I mean, it burns
a million acres over.
A million acres in East Indian out of burns and, you know.
Sagebrush
and
sage-grouse habitat. That's the most valuable.
Yeah.
Poor jackrabbits. You want me to talk to...
If you wouldn't mind getting on that. Get that on the agenda.
Okay.
There's no rush to move forward. We've got some time, but I think we need to do that. So, okay. Anything else for finance? Thanks a lot, Arthur.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Finance.
Yes, sir.
We're going to have a report and presentation on those special trust funds, setting up the new trust and stuff. But I don't think it's going to be as complicated as I wanted to make it out to be. His solution is much more simple.
What's the date on that? Do you have it ready?
Soon.
Yeah, probably, I'll say 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. That would be a good goal.
Before, but.
So we have a couple more things for board business.
Everything I ask him, I get the same response. I'm trying to read into that. I have a couple more months, and I'll have you figured out.
Yeah. Where are we placing the parks project on the WBS agenda?
That's an administrative item.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And
because it's a new contract. Sure. She doesn't need to be there. No, I think we've reviewed that thoroughly. I can happily defend it. So item number 5A is resolution 2017-021 in the matter of an appointment to the Joseph County Housing and Community Development Council. We have just one person who's being proposed to fill that position, and that's Keith Heck, former county commissioner, still looking to serve his community in that respect, and I wholeheartedly he was the liaison to that while he was in office, and I think he did an exemplary job. It's something he's passionate about. Fill that role well. Item number 5B is resolution 2017-021 in the matter of a reappointment to the Emergency Medical Service Board, and we have Marcy Hackett, 911 representative. She's been on there before. This is a reappointment for a 3-year term to expire in 2020. And I have no objection to that.
That's a reappointment? Yeah, that's fine.
She's been doing that for quite some time.
Is that calendar?
Yes, please. I was supposed to work on a letter. This is an assignment of the board a couple of weeks ago on Senate Bill 3. And I didn't get a chance to complete that yesterday like I'd hoped because of another issue that came about, misunderstanding, I think. And so I'm going to work on that this afternoon, and I'd like to be able to have authority to just put it in the signature file.
Sure.
It's going to be short and sweet, just a couple of paragraphs about our concern with them moving forward with further restrictions on mineral law at a state level. It adversely impacting only specific areas of the state. Specifically, Josephine County has the most number of those permits, mining opportunities, and just not having an opportunity to weigh in on this. I think the science isn't definitive, and it's going to be hitting the economy in a place that really can't afford one more element to be removed as an option from the table without a cost benefit of what is the bang for the buck here. I don't really see it doing anything to improve the ecology of fishing or anything else. So,
well,
I'll be working
right
on
ahead. That. I just got a copy of it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. As soon as I get one, you'll get one.
Thanks.
Anything from you? We're going to have a general discussion this afternoon at 2 o'clock, and there's something on that, isn't there? Commissioner Morgan is not able to be here today. I'm not 100% sure why she wasn't attending the weekly business session yesterday, but today I understand she's in Salem testifying on the taxation and assessment 2363 piece of House bill. It's the third or fourth time being proposed as counties being able to, and I understand from hearing from Representative Wilson that it's going to be amended to only apply to four different counties. We know it would be Curry and Josephine, but possibly Douglas and Yamhill would be those four counties given the option of assessing a not to exceed 2% to the taxing districts that we do assessment and taxation collection for in our counties.
Now, historically, you said this is the fourth time that it's been brought
could
up.
Be.
Or some, somewhere.
I believe
is this the first time
it's
been limited to four counties?
It would be. Yeah,
it was statewide before.
It was a statewide option for every county in the state. in 2009, and that piece of legislation reauthorized, reintroduced in 2013, which I helped craft and push forward. So this one, it might have better, you know.
Right, limited to those four counties.
Yeah.
May have
right?
a little more traction, because it
might.
If we
That'd
can get
great.
People from the other counties to vote on, would
sure.
be all right, because it doesn't affect them.
It doesn't especially it doesn't affect those other special taxing districts in those other counties. So they shouldn't necessarily be too incentivized to be opposed to it. That's the people who have not really understood the issue. They think it's going to be, you know, adversely affect them by garnering 1 to 2%. I think when you talk to Connie and Eve, their percentage that they would look to do, they could accomplish everything they want to do in their offices and have it paid for at 1.24%. That's the number that they had.
And you obviously know about that. Who's the big pushback?
Those special taxing districts that think that 1.24% was going to negatively affect.
Schools or
Yep. Really, if we were to invest a little bit more in our assessment taxation, we would have a more fair system of tax assessment, and that could accommodate. I'm not looking for people to be taxed wrongfully, and there's the Board of Property Tax Appeals. If you think that your assessment value is in error, and there were some successful people I know this last year who went through that process over across the hall. So it's not about that. It's about the fairness element. If you did yours, your remodel, and you got your permits and the assessment was done, your next door neighbor didn't get the permits. He didn't do that, and he did all of this assessed value and should be, you know, legally paying taxes on that. That's the system we live in. And but we didn't have the staff and the manpower to go out and look at that and
right.
do an assessment of it, and that's not fair. And I would say that there's probably $500 million to $1 billion worth of value out there on the rolls that isn't on the rolls. Should be assessed just because we don't have the manpower. So and the actual beneficiaries is everybody but us. You don't recapture your costs by going and investing in more assessment at 58 cents a thousand when your product costs you $2.50 and we're selling it for 58. We lose money on every dollar. So
lose money on every transaction, but
yep.
make it up in volume.
Anyway, nothing else? I think that's
for me.
It. We'll are we reconvening it too? Do we have it?
Yes. Diane Lehrer will be here to talk about the EMS board recommendation for the ASA agreement.
Ambulance service agreement. Okay. Riveting. I've done this twice already. Do we have to do it again? I thought we just did it. I felt like we just did it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With nothing further, the board is adjourned at 11:02.
Thank you.